You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we talk about trauma-informed care and how healing childhood traumas here in Wisconsin and elsewhere in the country can have long-lasting benefits on future outcomes.
First, when we think of the things that make a person successful, that put people at the top of their professions, you might think of talent, hard work, resilience, a spirit of innovation.
Our next guest says those can be important, but they leave out another big part of the equation, luck. He says we often overlook the role of luck, and that can ultimately lead us to bad social and economic policies.
Robert H. Frank joins us now. He's a professor of economics at Cornell University. He's the author of Success and Luck, Good Fortune and the Myth of Meritocracy. Robert, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Rob. Thank you.
Well, I understand that this book in part was inspired by a personal brush that you had with luck in a life-or-death situation. Can you tell us what happened to you on a tennis court about 9 years ago?
Yes, I was playing tennis with my regular partner, Tom Gilovich. He's a longtime friend and collaborator. He tells me that during the second set, as we sat on a changeover, I complained of feeling nauseated. And he said that the next thing he knew, I had slumped and fallen from the bench, and I was lying motionless on the court, no breath, no pulse. He knelt to investigate. I had every semblance of being dead. He called out for somebody to call 911 and then flipped me onto my back and started pounding on my chest vigorously. He said it took forever, but he finally got a cough out of me, but then he lost me again. And by this time, maybe 10 minutes had elapsed. And at that moment, an ambulance crew burst in through the front door of the facilities. They cut my shirt off and put the paddles on me, got me revived, rushed me to our local hospital, and then they put me on a helicopter and flew me to a larger one in Pennsylvania. And there I was on ice overnight, apparently, and for 3 days I was completely speaking gibberish from my hospital bed. And then finally on day four, I awoke with a clear head and was discharged the next day. And as soon as I managed to schedule a stress test and pass it, I was playing tennis with Tom again a few days later. But they told me after this episode that what had happened was I'd suffered an episode of sudden cardiac death. And they said 98% of the people who experience that in the field don't make it. The 2% who do make it usually suffer serious maladies of one sort or another, but somehow I managed to escape any lasting effects. And the reason for that, and here's where luck, I think, really did smile on me, was that just before, or minutes before I'd collapsed on the tennis court, two separate auto accidents had occurred close to the tennis center. And one of them did not involve serious injuries, and so the driver of it had been able to peel off when the dispatcher called him and come directly to me. And except for that, I'm not here.
Well, I'm glad you're here, and good luck there, definitely. And you've acknowledged that. So that got you thinking about luck. Now, in this book, though, you're looking at success and career success. And a lot of people would say, okay, you got a lucky break with that ambulance. But a successful, say, business founder, CEO, that's not luck. That's hard work. That's talent.
Of course.
But you say, no, there's a lot of luck in there. Why do you think it's important to suss out how much of that is luck?
You know, the people who succeed on a grand scale in business, their view of themselves isn't distorted. You know they've worked hard. They know they're smart. They've been solving difficult problems every day for 30 years. So most of the time, they really are smart and hardworking. If they weren't smart and hardworking, it's very unlikely that they would have succeeded on any significant scale. But what that all overlooks is that there are millions of people who are smart and hardworking, but they don't succeed in any significant way. And so I think what people naturally tend to overlook is that careers unfold over time. There are thousands of tiny steps. If any one of those steps had been different, if a promotion that you got when you were in your 20s because the person who was a little more qualified than you couldn't accept it, he had an ill mother to care for, and any small step along the way had been different, the whole trajectory would have changed course slightly. And it would have ended up in a very different spot. Maybe it would have been a better spot, but it could and probably would have been a much worse spot if you were highly successful. And that's what people kind of lose sight of. It's these little things that happen that ultimately ramify over many cycles into huge effects.
It sounds like something that's really hard to measure. How do you go about trying to assess how important luck is?
I did a simulation, and this is just an example, so it doesn't prove a whole lot, but it gives you an idea of the flavor of what can happen. So the markets where luck matters the most are what we call winner-take-all markets. These are ones where there are really only a handful of top positions. There are thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people competing to occupy them. And so it's a contest. It proceeds in stages. And if in the simulations we did, it was a pure performance contest. It was absolutely 100% meritocratic. The best performer wins. And we let skill and effort count for 90% of performance, 98% of performance, and luck count for only 2%. And in the simulations we did thousands of them, my assistant and I, what we found was that the most talented contestant almost never wins the contest. Hmm. And that's because the most talented contestant will have just average luck. He won't have good luck or bad luck. There will be many other contestants who are almost as talented as the most talented contestant, and among them there will be at least a few who have been exceptionally lucky. And almost in every instance, it will be one of them who triumphs over the most talented contestant. It's not that the winner is not talented. The winner is also very talented and hardworking. But there was somebody the winner managed to beat who was even more talented and hardworking than she was.
Talking to Robert Frank, author of the new book, Success and Luck, Good Fortune, and the Myth of Meritocracy. I want to talk about where luck surfaces in our lives, and I guess it comes up right at the beginning, where we're born, who we're born to. Do you see that as being a big part of the unacknowledged luck that we have, that goes behind success?
You know, people, if you ask them, you know, does it matter that you were born in a good home and raised by caring parents, they will say, of course it matters. They're not naive. They know if they'd been raised in a gang-infested neighborhood by parents without jobs, life would have turned out much worse for them. But when you build your life's narrative, those things don't surface very prominently when you're sort of constructing, how did I get to the top? You know, what you think of is all the long hours you put in, all the hard problems you solved, all the formidable rivals you had to defeat along the way. Those are the things that really shape your life story. And the fact that if you hadn't had a few breaks along the way, those things, they matter. And if somebody points them out to you, you'll concede quickly that they do matter, but they're not the kind of thing that you first think of.
And that seems a key to what you're writing about. It's not just that there is luck that helps determine success, but that there is luck and we don't acknowledge it. Successful people don't acknowledge it. So how does that steer us wrong as individuals and as a society?
Yeah, that's the crux of the policy message of Success and Luck, the book. If you ask an entrepreneur to describe himself, the most common label you'll hear is, I was a risk taker. Of course, they were talented and hardworking. That goes without saying. But they'll say first, I took risks. And then if you look in the dictionary, what's risk? It's the possibility that something could go grievously wrong. And if somebody took big risks and succeeded, then they were lucky by definition. But the fact that they don't recognize that they were lucky makes them have a sense that they did it all entirely on their own. People will remember Obama's so-called "you didn't build that" speech. That wasn't his message. His message really was, if you built a successful business, you didn't build it entirely on your own. The system played a role. Your parents, your teachers, they had a role too. So the failure to recognize that you didn't do it completely on your own makes people very stingy when it comes to the money that's come their way in the marketplace. You know, they benefited a lot from the investments others made over the last two centuries. They don't want to pay forward for the next generation coming along. And I think that's where the next group is really severely handicapped compared to previous generations. We've been cutting the top tax rates on the high earners. The schools have been getting budget cutbacks. The infrastructure has been decaying rapidly. We're not really investing in the future the way we once did.
We're talking to Cornell University economics professor Robert Frank. His new book is Success and Luck, Good Fortune and the Myth of Meritocracy. He says luck plays a bigger role in success than a lot of us believe.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. How big a role does luck play in a successful career? Is it purely about talent and effort, or is luck a big factor, do you think? Do you see a moment in your life that led you on a path, for better or worse, that could just as easily have gone the other way? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We continue our conversation about luck and the role it plays in a successful career. Robert H. Frank is with us. His new book is called Success and Luck, Good Fortune and the Myth of Meritocracy.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Do successful, talented, hardworking people always rise to the top, or does luck play a big role? Getting that break, being in the right place at the right time. How did it work out in your life? Was there a moment that could have switched you from one track to the other for better or worse? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Chris on the line in Green Bay. Chris, hi.
Hello.
What do you think?
Well, I just want to say I think you're calling it luck, where I come from a lower middle-class income family that sacrificed a lot to send the kids to a parochial school for the academics, and once we were like 14, we were getting jobs on our own and helping contribute to family, and through all that, we all came above and beyond whatever our parents had, and I mean, we're not super rich, but we're not poor.
Gotcha, Chris, you're cutting out there. Robert's saying, if a family helps out, if a community helps out, there's nothing wrong with that. I assume you'd probably agree with that.
Sure.
But we talked about, you know, the luck of being born into the right family. That's not the only kind of luck you talk about in your book, though. What other kinds of things are turning points in this road to success?
Oh, I think in academia, my own profession, we see a lot of luck. In my case, I got four or five papers published very quick succession with very short turnaround times. That's never happened to me since then. I think the papers I've written since then, since I was a young professor, are probably better than the ones I wrote early on, but I just got lucky with quick turnarounds and was able to get promoted and stay at a good institution where it's been easy to do my work for the last decades. That could very easily not have happened. And, you know, everybody's got a story like that to tell. What's interesting is that if you try to tell people that they've been lucky, they seem to resist that message. I don't know if you remember the angry reaction to Elizabeth Warren's speech in 2012. She was just trying to remind people that if they'd built a business that succeeded, well, you shipped your goods to market on roads the rest of us helped pay for, you hired workers that the community educated and so on, you should pay forward for the next group. Pretty uncontroversial, but what people seemed to hear was that she was saying, oh, you didn't deserve your success. You don't merit the lofty position you managed to attain. She wasn't saying that, but I think people do tend to resist being told that they were lucky. What's interesting in my own experience is that if you'll ask people who are successful to describe any examples of lucky breaks they might have enjoyed along the way, even as you did for your listeners a moment ago, they don't seem to get angry or defensive in the least when they confront that question. They think about it. When they can think of examples of lucky breaks they enjoyed, they want to tell you about them. Their eyes light up. And what we know is that when people have those conversations, when they're recalling examples of times they were lucky, they get much more generous. They can think of many more examples of public investments that they can support. They seem to get happier. Other people seem to like them better. There's just a torrent of good things that happen when they reflect on the fact that they've been lucky. But it's better to ask them about their luck rather than tell them that they've been lucky.
Talking about success and luck, that's the title of a new book by Robert H. Frank, economy professor at Cornell University. You've also, over the years, looked at things like, maybe how a product becomes successful. Or I know you did a study on music and how particular music can find favor over time. You did an experiment on that. And it's not always the best product, it's not always the best musician who finds success and popularity. What is it maybe that happens early on that picks that winner, regardless of talent and quality?
Yeah, in the book I describe an experiment. It's not one I did. It's one by a very talented sociologist, Duncan Watts. It was called Music Lab. And in the first round, anyone could go to the Music Lab website. There were 48 indie bands with one song each posted on it. You could download any song for free on the condition that you give it a rating. How much did you like it on a scale? That was their measure of the objective quality of the 48 songs. Then what they did was they did 8 separate websites. Different people visited the different ones. And they saw the same 48 bands and the same 48 songs, but in addition to that, they saw how many times each song had been downloaded and what quality rating it had gotten from downloaders so far. And what was really interesting was that songs that ranked in the middle of the quality distribution could either succeed or fail, and the difference was dramatic. One particular song was ranked 26 out of the 48 in the objective rankings. It became number 1 on one of the 8 websites. It was number 40 on another of the 8 websites. And the only difference was, did the first people who downloaded the song happen to like it? You know, most of the songs on offer were ones that some people liked and others didn't. And so if the first ratings they saw of your song were positive ratings, then the song tended to rise in the rankings and do quite well. If the first ones people saw were negative rankings, then or ratings, then it would tail off to the bottom of the rankings list. So just pure dumb luck. Did the first people who heard your song happen to like it?
Let's go back to our callers now. We've got Emily on the line in Madison. Emily, hi.
Hi, I have a great example of exactly what you're talking about with academic success. When I was in high school, I got a scholarship to UW-Madison, and our school had a valedictorian scholarship for 4.0 students. That year, there were 7 students with a 4.0, so the scholarship was split 7 ways. Well, I happened to get a 3.9, so I got the next available scholarship, but I got the whole thing. It wasn't split with anybody.
So you got more than the 4.0 students.
Yeah, so those people who were, I was really hardworking too to get a 3.9, but.
Sure.
Well, Emily, that is good luck. And you say there's weird things like that, like sometimes in certain fields, having a last name with the letter A will bring you more benefits than later in the alphabet, the time of year you're born. Fluky little stuff like happened to Emily can make a big difference down the road, Robert.
Yeah, it's when you see all these examples, I think you naturally feel a little bit more humble about where the rewards got doled out. Yeah, you were good, you worked hard, but probably you had a break or two along the way.
Emily, thanks a lot. Congratulations on the runner-up status there. So, Robert, what kind of lessons are you hoping people take away from this for their own lives and maybe as they think about what public policy should look like?
You know, the tragedy is that I think prosperous people, when they're lobbying so hard for tax cuts, I think they're sincere. They believe that they earned every cent on their own, that they didn't get any breaks. They're entitled to all that money. And they also seem to believe that if they had less money left over after taxes, they'd be much less happy than they are now. They wouldn't be able to buy as much of what they want successfully. But that's just not the way the evidence points. If all the prosperous people paid a little bit more in tax, we could increase the Pell Grants that poor students get to go to college and do a whole lot of other things that, you know, everybody agrees would be a good thing to do. And the rich people, the prosperous people who were paying a little more in tax, would still get just as much of what they want as before. And that's because if you're prosperous, what do you want? You have everything you need. You want something special, the stuff there's not enough of. Maybe it's a home site with a view or a painting that others want to. So how do you get those things? You bid against other prosperous people, and the high bidders end up getting them. And what people overlook is that if their taxes go up a bit and everyone else like them pays more too, those bidding contests get settled in exactly the same way as before.
And so we'll have to leave it there. Robert Frank is professor of economics at Cornell University. Thanks to him. His new book is called Success and Luck, Good Fortune and the Myth of Meritocracy.